Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
In a case that made global headlines, a woman dubbed the Ketamine Queen has pleaded guilty to supplying a drug that led to the tragic overdose of actor Matthew Perry. The story not only raises questions about accountability, but also shines a spotlight on ketamine itself. Once known as an anesthetic, it's now become both a party drug and paradoxically a treatment for depression. But why has ketamine gained such popularity, and what are the real dangers behind it? To help us unpack this, we're joined by Dr. Daniel Israel. A very, very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. For those who don't know, what is ketamine? What was it used for?
So ketamine was, I wouldn't say advented in many years ago as an anesthetic drug. It's an induction agent. So that, but in layman's terms, means that when we put a patient to sleep, we often use, we'll always use a medicine to make their awareness less and make them go into an anesthetic. And ketamine has always been used as one of those. Another example one is propofol, which is that's actually the drug that's landed up killing Michael Jackson. So,
So that wasn't ketamine.
No, that was propofol. But the reality is that ketamine was initially always used in theatres only. It has a dissociative anesthetic property. So in other words, it makes a patient feel disconnected from their body and disconnected from their awareness, which actually helps with the anesthetic process.
So that's interesting, because I was telling listeners earlier, we had a family member who suffered from CRPS, complex regional pain syndrome, and couldn't walk. And they were admitted to hospital in Cape Town, where they specialized in this. And for 2 weeks or so, they were on obviously a low dose of ketamine, and that enabled them to start moving their limbs and to actually learning to walk again. And it was an incredible, incredible drug, you know, used in that context.
Yeah, so amazingly, that follows the story, is that so ketamine is still an excellent induction agent and is used in terms of trauma, well, on the road cases, not in a pre-hospital environment. Right. But then it was found that ketamine had excellent neuropathic control properties. So in patients who had neuropathic, in other words, nerve damage pain, ketamine could be used ongoing in controlled ways, which we can talk about, but to get on top of this pain, which otherwise you had no relief. And then it was found afterwards that ketamine had excellent properties in terms of treating depression and mood disorders. Right. So as we've seen with other things in medicine, you know, very often if you look at the whole, there's so many examples, GLP-1, Ozempic, that was first purposed for diabetes, but found some excellent weight loss property results. So there is a lot of exciting ground to be covered in terms of the uses of ketamine, and has been already for some time.
So what went wrong? I mean, in terms of, you know, the abuse of the drug?
So you know, Howard, I think that with all these very, let's call them very special drugs, and it's not one specific class, it's across the different fields of medicine, I see it as almost a continuum. So on the left, you have this traditional use, and on the complete right is its recreational, party, uncontrolled use, which has definitely been used in ketamine for years as well, where people would actually use ketamine as a recreational drug to get highs and the problem is that when these drugs are that potent that they can do these wonderful things, they need to be given in the context of very safe monitoring, watching, under medical supervision. And where this went wrong is, you know, as have happened with Michael Jackson, is when a famous actor has the resources and access to so much and controls the medical kind of system.
If I'm having trouble with my line, or if it is, if it's Daniel's line, but I think that
it
could be mine, that is a little bit problematic.
And the difficulty with ketamine really is that one has to embrace it in a really structured, safe environment. And I think that in South Africa, for example, one of the real challenges with this is that with the likes of SAHPRA, who is our governing body around medication, and SASOC, which is the Society of Psychiatrists, there's such a reluctance not to do harm that they almost cause harm in the process by regulating too much, and then it becomes misused. And that's what happened in this case as well, with this friend's case.
Right. And how much of a problem is it in South Africa? I mean, are you coming across it? Well, would you, as a doctor, would you be able to pick up if a patient is abusing something like ketamine?
Well, remember, ketamine has to be given intramuscularly at worst, which is an injection in a muscle, or intravenously, as it should be, in a controlled way. So we don't generally see patients, who are abusing it. I suppose there are people to get hold of it and are able to do that. But I mean, the more interesting thing with it is, like, why is it used, as opposed to, if it's so great for pain and depression, why don't we just use the ones that are known as painkillers and antidepressants? And really, it increases a neurotransmitter called glutamate in the brain, and glutamate has very rapid effects. So when you have a patient who's very depressed and has been on medication for weeks and months and nothing working, and the next step always for very treatment refractory depression was to send them for ECT, which is electroconvulsive therapy, where I'm sure you've heard about it, there's where people got shocks to their brain. And now, this is the thing, where this patient does not require that inpatient, and they can go into a clinic for an hour or two, get a ketamine infusion, and do that every few weeks. And really has long-lasting effects, but it acts so quickly. So it really, really is. And if you look in the mainstream, information, there's systemic reviews about it. There's professors from even Wits University and who endorse it. But it's about really the system not endorsing it, and therefore massive open to abuse.
Which is exactly where it's at. It is 7:30. Dr. Daniel Israel, thank you for that. Thank you for educating us about this, because, as I say, we're hearing about it, we're reading about it more and more in the news, and the more aware we are, the better equipped we are to confront these things.